News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Indeed it is. It's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. Rain moving out. That's good. Things are going to be a little chilly, and maybe a little chilly for the Thursday evening parade. But after that, things do warm up and things do look good for the weekend.
Yeah, they really do. And into next week, a nice stretch of good weather.
Yep.
And like you said, probably the coldest parade night will be tomorrow night with the polka dots rolling. We have Moon Pie Minute coming up in this next break. And a reminder, all of the Moon Pie Minutes to this point are listed where you can click on them and listen to them at fmtalk1065.com under the Moon Pie Minutes tab, plus that full schedule for Mardi Gras parades on both sides of the bay. I guess Daphne and Fairhope getting rolling this weekend. So it's a big week down here in Southwest Alabama.
Let me take a moment and talk about my friend who I know is up to the task. His name is Jason Wachter. He's with Chase & Holmes Real Estate Company in Daphne, in Old Town Daphne. And Jason's got so many connections because he has so many loyal friends and genuine friends in the business, around the business. And that's why he can take care of nearly anything that you would like to inquire about, any help you might need in real estate. I mean, he has for over 30 years been a licensed broker. For over 20 years, he's built some of the most beautiful homes on the Eastern Shore. He's basically, his business is operated by locals for locals. And right now, if you live on the waterfront and you'd like to get a deal with Chasen where he takes care of all the maintenance, every bit of the maintenance of your waterfront property, that would be awfully nice, right? And he's somebody, again, you can really, really trust. So HVAC, generators, boat lifts, all of that, everything in between. Carpentry and painting and everything, consolidated building, so he makes it easy for you. This, you know, he'll bill you and that's it. You don't have to worry about all the contractors and juggle all of that. Protect your property values. Good man, does good work in a lot of ways in real estate. Call Chasen for pricing and available packages at 251-379-4444. You can also visit that website, ChasenHomes.com.
A lot to get to this hour, and you're a big part of it, so send us text. Give us a call, 251-343-0106. We'll get into this vote that extended the, I guess it just reopened the government when it comes down to it and takes us through most of this year.
They've got 2 weeks to work on the DHS.
2 weeks to work on the DHS funding and right. Then the SAVE Act not included. So I want to talk about the SAVE Act and which Republicans decided to vote against just because it seems they were kind of fed up with the Democrats getting wins in order to get this spending bills across the finish line. But also with election season heating up here, and I mean, you think about it, May 19th, not that far away, and that's the primary. And of course, in Alabama, the primary decides so many seats because so many parts of the state are red, right?
Yep.
And so that's
you win the primary, you win the state.
Exactly. And that's certainly the case with AL1. We know that because of the voting habits of the newly drawn AL1 district, but also with Barry Moore beating Jerry Carl in that last primary and then easily winning the general. So the Republican primary for AL1 is the election, more or less. And a new poll out here, and Jeff Poore has been talking quite a bit about this race here over these last couple of weeks. And former Congressman Jerry Carl, he's been out front ahead of his opponents for the primary. This is from 1819 News, and Jeff wrote this up, actually, so he'll have more next hour or when he talks with us at the end of this hour. In August, a Signal survey showed Carl ahead of his opponents, which were State Representative Rhett Marcus out of Enterprise and U.S. Army veteran Joshua McKee. According to a poll of likely Republican voters more recently conducted by the AM Research Group. Now, this is on behalf of Carl's campaign, so we talk about this every election season. Not that the books are cooked, but when the press releases come out, campaigns often have a way of making it sound, you know, better for themselves, and why not? But that doesn't mean these numbers are bunk. They could be very accurate. But this poll was conducted by AM Research Group on behalf of Carl's campaign, and it shows he still has a commanding lead. They conducted this poll January 31st through February 2nd, so just last week. They gave it a margin of error of plus or minus 6.1%, and according to this, Carl has an even larger lead now than he did in that August Signal survey, and there are more candidates involved now, too. Not only do you have Marcus and McKee that are still in, but also Austin Sidwell, Jimmy Dees, and John Mills. According to this poll, with primary 100 days away, Jerry Carl at 43% of the vote, Rhett Marcus at 7%, Josh McKee at 2%, Jimmy Dees 2%, Austin Sidwell 1%, John Mills 1%, James Richardson 0%, and undecided, the only one that is outpolling Congressman Carl right now, 44% say they remain undecided. But even with that large of an undecided rate, Carl, according to this poll, has such a large lead. I mean, 37 points up over Marcus, that if this is true, he is in quite the driver's seat leading into that primary in May. Jeff writes, the survey appears to reflect what has been consistently shown in earlier polling this year and late last year, conducted by different interested parties throughout the state. And it also showed that Carl, Marcus, and McKee are above water in the favorability category. So this isn't one of those races where everyone in the district despises their choices. It sounds like folks in Baldwin County and beyond are pretty happy with the choices they have. But even still, Jerry Carl with quite the lead, according to this poll.
Yeah, I think listening to Jeff, reading about this race, looking at those numbers, I think a lot of it has to do with Barry Moore in this way. Barry Moore, his history has been kind of like there's one Barry Moore. There's one guy that's got this underdog history where he came through and really was really overwhelmingly appreciated in and around his hometown. Those voters really came out for Barry Moore, then he was able to do enough in Baldwin County to win the whole vote. But to the fact that Barry Moore now has got his sights set on the U.S. Senate, and we're told, and I read, be careful dismissing Barry Moore. Like, he's not going to win any kind of a statewide, well, maybe, you know, he's been a curious political figure in the way that he's been able to operate and win and build momentum, and no one's really stopped him yet. So I think the fact that Carl, he was a victim of Barry Moore 2 years ago, and now Barry Moore is, you know, he's not in the race.
Yeah, and he picked up the Trump endorsement pretty early there.
He did.
And with Marcus, and, you know, you wonder how so much political firepower is coming out of Enterprise, because that was kind of the worry that he would carry that vote as well. Plus, he, in his early years, was in Baldwin County. I don't know if he grew up in Spanish Ford or Daphne it was. We had a listener who texted us and said they were either in school with him or taught him in Baldwin County. So I thought maybe those two things combined, plus the Katie Britt endorsement.
That seemed to be three things that they could have propelled him to be the favorite in this thing.
And he has a fundraising lead, which is, I think, in part, a big part, probably because of that Britt endorsement. But right now, if this poll holds true, Jerry Carl with quite the lead heading into that primary. Crazy.
Yeah. So when I look at this race and I'm a little surprised by those numbers, I simply think, really, you can attribute it more to the man that's not in the race and the man that now wants to be U.S. Senator, and that's Barry Moore. And he's more of a political engine than he came on the scene in a stunning fashion, and he hadn't stopped.
No, it's been a pretty rapid rise. Yeah. You're right about that. So with the vote yesterday, and Johnson called it, you know, it seemed like it was on shaky legs, but the House Speaker said, no, we'll get a vote in Tuesday, and I have the votes to get these spending bills passed. We'll reopen the government. Well, it ended up being, I guess, a 4-day, maybe 5-day shutdown, much shorter than last year's shutdown. But
let's see how many days. It's like 4 days.
So what's wild, though, is you had exactly 21 Democrats and 21 Republicans hop aisles, but not necessarily, you know, the Republicans that voted against this. It wasn't because they agree with the Democrats that voted against it. It seems that they are mostly hardliners who said, listen, we've already given up a lot, and a lot of this funding has been decided that the Democrats are fighting against. Plus, many of them wanted to include the SAVE Act as part of the spending bill. And so that was not included. I think Senator Thune is the one who's promising that they'll get that up for vote, I guess, individually here very soon. And you also had this 2-week extension of the DHS funding, which is the reason that so many Democrats used for holding up this vote and shutting the government down.
Right. And it is interesting. You had 21 on each side oppose this thing, 21 for this reason, you know, and 21 for that reason. they were not unified in any way. The Republicans and Democrats who voted no, it was for different reasons, obviously.
And I don't have a list of the Democrats. I imagine many of them moderate or in competitive districts where they felt that the sting would be felt more from leaving the government shut down than from, you know, jumping onto the same side as the Republicans.
Yeah.
But the 21 Republicans who broke ranks, and they had a range of reasoning behind it. Some lawmakers argued the bill needed to include the SAVE Act, or at least some provisions shoring up election integrity. And some wanted a full year funding for the DHS and eliminate the Democrat-requested earmarks. It doesn't look to me like any of the Alabama congressmen felt as strongly as the rest of these, but you have Thomas Massie, who, no surprise, I'd like to see the last spending bill that Thomas Massie signed his name alongside for, because he's completely, according to what he says, completely against any new spending. He feels it's all too much. But you have Andy Biggs out of Arizona, Eli Crane out of Arizona, and it looks like the also David Schweikert out of Arizona, all three voting against it yesterday. Lauren Boebert in Colorado. Let's see, Josh Brasheen in Oklahoma, Tim Burchett in Tennessee, Eric Burleson out of Missouri, Kat Kamak out of Florida, Byron Donalds, Florida, Randy Fine, Florida, Anna Paulina Luna out of Florida, Corey Mills from Florida, Greg Stubbe from Florida. So many of the Florida ones.
Yeah. Arizona and Florida.
It. Yeah. You also have, let's see here, Brandon Gill out of Texas, Massie, Andy Ogles out of Tennessee, Scott Perry, Pennsylvania, Chip Roy out of Texas, Keith Self out of Texas, and then Victoria Spartz from Indiana and William Timmons from South Carolina. So a lot of the Texas and Florida congressional members, Republicans, voting against this. And I think pretty much all of them, the reason they voted against it was because it either didn't include the SAVE Act or didn't include the full year funding for the DHS, and they wanted to go ahead and move that along.
Did they vote against it ceremonially, realizing it was, I mean, they were in the safe in that they were able to vote their conscience, well, whatever you want to say, but they knew that that it was going to pass anyway, so they could make this stand without really harming a relationship with Donald Trump?
I have a feeling, because Johnson was so confident that he had the vote, there had to have been some jockeying going around. If 21 moved from the Democrats and 21 from the Republicans, he probably had the Dems saying, well, these 21 absolutely need to win their races that are coming up, and they're in tough races. We're going to let them vote to open the government. That way the rest of us can look like we stood strong and we're against the ICE and DHS activities. And then the Republicans that jumped to the other side, I mean, if Johnson knew he didn't have 21 Republican votes, you'd think he would feel like he was in trouble, but he seemed pretty confident all the way up till yesterday.
Well, he said the same thing beginning last Friday, I believe, or late last week. Johnson had the same same rhetoric, was like, it's going to pass, we're going to get it done Tuesday. So he was very confident when, to just on the outside looking in, it looked a little more chaotic.
And there are a lot of conservatives that don't necessarily hold office that are incredibly angry that the SAVE Act still hasn't been brought to a vote, because they feel this is the time to get that done. You have Senator Ron Johnson out of Wisconsin, who was on News Nation. He said the Democrats' opposition reverts back to wanting it to be easy to cheat in elections. Quote, this is their way of maintaining power. They flood Americans with millions of people. They make them dependent on the government. He says these are measures that are supported by 75% to 80% of the American public on all sides of the political spectrum, because Americans don't want their legitimate vote to be canceled by a fraudulent one. So you have, and I had the CNN audio that Sean played yesterday where they were talking about Nicki Minaj because she came out, she was on stage with Trump last week or 2 weeks ago, putting money forward for the Trump accounts. She's a big Trump fan.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how long that's been in the mix, but she posted on social media that voter ID should be, you know, a law, and so a federal law. And so CNN used that to go through the numbers, and a vast majority of Americans on both sides of the aisle, regardless of race or gender, although the numbers kind of fluctuate a little bit, but there's no doubt a majority want voter ID federal election laws. So the fact that you have like Chuck Schumer going out there and calling this again this week Jim Crow 2.0.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Same line that they were using for a lot of the state election laws that were put forward, like the Georgia one specifically. And they're totally off on what the American people want. So you ask why? Well, it's hard not to go with the line of thinking that, well, they get votes from folks who don't have ID, which means they might not necessarily be legal voters.
Exactly.
And they're holding so strong on this, I think it makes them look worse and worse by the day.
I think it does too. And I thought it was particularly, they broke down those numbers in about every which way you could do it, including along racial lines and even among African Americans.
And Latinos.
Yeah, both over 70% said legal ID. You should have an ID if you want to vote. So you have, they really don't have a leg to stand on unless Chuck Schumer says what he says. And then the next question that Danner Dalton asks, if we had a chance to be in a studio with Chuck Schumer, is why are you so concerned about people who don't have IDs? Because the people themselves that vote legally are not.
Yeah. It's a good question. I wish someone would ask it. They probably have. He's probably just
right
past it.
Yeah, I would like the opportunity.
We'll get to the text line, 251-343-0106, and a whole lot more to get into this hour, including a visit from Jeff Poor. Right now, it's time for the Moon Pie Minute, brought to you by Dave & Buster's.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Sure do. 826, just quick traffic update. Thank you, Jeff. Says a lot of fog developing on the Bayway. Drive safe. So we don't have the fog over here, but of course the Bay, a different story. So thank you, Jeff. A lot of fog developing. Drive safe. G from LA says those congressional voting numbers prove that politics are an orchestrated crock and they are simply playing the American people. I guess that's why like the series like House of Cards and I don't know, I'm sure there's others that are very similar, are so popular because, I mean, we're really beyond what we see in the media and what we read. You don't really know how things run up there in D.C., but there's a lot of horse trading going on and a lot of people saying things. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here, but people saying things publicly that they don't feel privately or they feel certain pressures, whether it's an election coming up or a lobbyist for a big firm that's in their ear. And all the meanwhile, whatever they're saying, I mean, they're politicians, so we know this, but it's not exactly something you can take to the bank.
Well, I'd say, like on a state level, this the mud dumping bill doesn't really have any teeth at all, and it doesn't, okay, so it's on Ivy's desk.
Yeah.
It's not like she's going to sign it, and the babe turns baby blue.
Crystal clear, yeah.
It's not going to happen, right? So,
and it came with much fanfare, right?
It came out a big, bold announcement, and I guess Chris Elliott, right?
Chris Elliott was really pushing it. You had Rhett Marcus, who is running for AL1, who was a big part of this bill.
Right.
And then the Corps of Engineers put out a statement saying, listen, it's not as bad as they're making it sound.
Yeah, this mud dumping is not so bad. They probably don't even appreciate the term mud dumping.
No, they use thin layer placement, right?
Yes.
And then after that, there was amendments put on, or at least one amendment that looks like, I guess the way I've read it is that if the Corps of Engineers doesn't have the money to facilitate further expansion of the thin layer placement, like putting it elsewhere for beneficial use, and the port's not going to pay for it, you have to get that funding from somewhere. And the state said, well, we're not going to pay for it. So it has to be the federal money that comes in to afford for that.
And that's where Katie Britt's voice is interesting in all of this, and that she was the one that made a statement at some point saying this is something, and maybe even Tubbs a little bit, saying, you know, we have to look at this is some serious stuff. I don't know if she guaranteed money or promised money, but basically, you're right. The way the legislation is, if it's signed, it's required to be enacted.
Will it be in October like so many others?
Probably, but the point is that unless federal funding comes into the rescue, the port or the Corps of Engineers, they're not on the hook. They don't. It's like, look,
yeah,
we don't have the money for that, so they're off the hook. If federal funding shows up, then that can
you
be
can enact
be done,
them.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. But otherwise, it doesn't have any teeth without federal funding.
And Britt pushed this so far along federally, but now it sounds like it's going to be up to her and our other leaders that head to D.C. to make sure that funding is earmarked year in and year out to get it done.
News, weather, traffic, and sports. You're listening to Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig.
.835 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings. Right now it's time to head to McConnell Automotive and talk with Louie Arata. Hey, Louie.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we're doing just fine, and I guess starting to dry out over here. 65 in Airport, still some rain in the area. And we haven't seen much of that, but when we do, there's normally some accidents. If folks do get into a fender bender or worse, you guys can take care of them at McConnell Automotive.
That's right. Like we always say, one-stop shop, man. We got great people back there in the body shop. Call Rachel at 251-476-4141 if you have that unfortunate accident. She'll try to help you out with all the insurance needs and maybe set you up with a loaner car and try to help you out in that and make it, you know, as easy as possible. And if you get that call that is total, McConnellAutomotive.com, man, we got a great selection of new pre-owned and new cars. We're getting new cars in every day now. So just if you're looking for something, just check the website out because we've got them coming in every day. Or give us a call, 251-476-4141.
Yeah, and you have pretty much, you know, whatever anyone is looking for out there. You were telling us the other day about a 15-passenger van that you have, but you also have all the way up to, like, the newest model of trucks and SUVs.
That's right. A guy came in the other day and heard us on the radio and said, and wanted to know if we'd rent it for Mardi Gras. I can't do that. But I'll sell it to you. Yeah. But, yeah, well, I mean, you know, 15 passengers are hard to come by. A lot of churches use them, and we got one.
Yeah, I'd have trouble finding 14 friends to ride alongside with me, but I guess that would be my problem once I get the van. Really appreciate your time, Louie, and hope you have a great rest of your day.
Hey, thank y'all. Come see us.
That's Louie Raddick. Go see him. You'll find him at McConnell Automotive on Dauphin Street, just east of I-65, and the website, McConnellAutomotive.com.
I don't know if you're surprised by this headline or not. Former President Bill Clinton, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton.
This could be anything, but continue.
You want to get in the time machine and just imagine what the end of this headline would be? They will be deposed by the House Oversight Committee.
Yeah, they dispose. They will be deposed, but they do the disposing.
They do the disposing. But anyway, the committee chairman, James Comer, announced that Hillary Clinton will sit down for a closed-door transcribed interview on February 26th, and her Valentine, Bill Clinton, will appear on February 27th under the same terms. Both interviews will be filmed. It comes after weeks of back and forth between the former first couple and the House GOP-led committee about whether they would testify in the chamber's probe into Jeffrey Epstein under what terms. They were both facing contempt of Congress votes in the House this week if they did not agree to come to Capitol Hill. So I guess on some level they were feeling a little pressure.
And if I had to place the odds on, you know, whether anything will come from that deposition, I'd say probably not. I mean, they always are lawyered up and do a good job of not just the Clintons, but, you know, the real power players really never get a slap on the wrist for anything. And you would expect nothing will come from this. But there's some people who think, I was reading somebody online yesterday who thinks that this is a big enough deal that this could be a point where the Clintons, if they feel like they are, you know, close to finding things in these Epstein files or whatever, that they're just going to let it all out. Like, let everybody catch what's coming to them and give more information. It sounded like a really
Doesn't sound like anything that has happened to this point.
No,
everybody is. I don't know if they're protecting each other, but they're certainly protecting themselves.
It's so strange too, because with 3 million files that were released, maybe 3 million plus on Friday, and so many of them, they messed up with the redactions and victims' names made it through. So
they
bring it back in and then redact it, and it's such a, you know, needle in a haystack thing that people are posting real things from the emails that are incredibly disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
And often the names of those involved in that email are redacted.
Right.
And so people go, you know, what the heck? But then there's also a lot of stuff that was released that was already public knowledge, and they, you know, redacted faces, and it made it seem worse than it was. Like, there's this one Instagram guy who he's quite a character, Dan Bilzerian. I don't know if you've ever heard of him or know of him, but he was like this playboy, more or less, who I think had a real rich daddy, and made a lot of money. I don't know how much of it was on his own or just, you know, he was getting from his dad, but he would play these high-stakes poker games, and he had this Instagram page that was just full of women that he would hire, not theoretically like, you know, like what's the word? Not prostitutes.
Sex trafficking.
That's not the way he put it. It was almost like models that he would take out with him on boats. And so his Instagram, his social media was just filled with pictures like this. And he had the most amazing firearms, and he'd be out on the range shooting. It was like a kind of a, you know, if Bruce Willis in his 20s was able to actually put his real life out there, you know, it would be something like that. So anyway, this Bilzerian, who's been very controversial over the years, there were images that were released from the Epstein files that had him, and in one of them, Post Malone, the singer, was in it. And then there were two models on a couch with them, of age, I believe. And they redacted the faces of the models, but they left this Bilzerian and Post Malone's faces unredacted, which led a lot of people to say, you know, what's going on here? Was Post Malone one of the biggest artists going these days? Was he in the mix here with this Epstein stuff? But then you had this Dan Bilzerian who came out and said, no, I post these images that you're seeing here that are partially redacted are on my Instagram page. You can go back and look at them right now.
So what was the point of that particular photo?
Well, I don't know why it was involved in the Epstein files, whether it was sent to or from.
Oh, that's where it came from.
But
I got it.
Just with this mass release of files, you have a lot of crap that apparently is crap, or a lot of people whose messages to or from Epstein have been taken out of context. But there's also what appears to be some really disturbing stuff that I'm sure online sleuths are really pouring over and digging into. And if the past is any, you know, indicative of the future, the online sleuths are going to be able to do much more than what we've seen so far from the federal investigators.
I agree. And the online sleuths, this has been a heyday this past Friday, or the new information coming, that's files on top of files on top of files. I'll tell you how prevalent it is now, is that I was trying to get a little handle on this Super Bowl coming up. So I downloaded a football podcast, and guess what they were talking about in the football podcast?
Were they talking about the Epstein files?
They were talking about the Epstein files.
Super Bowl week.
I'm like, I really want to know if Drake May can throw against the two deep zone. They weren't giving me any of that because of Steve Tisch. Now he's a
Giants
managing
co-owner.
Partner of the Giants, and I didn't realize. So they were talking about Steve Tisch and his involvement in this. Maybe at some point the NFL may have to look at this, you know. But it's still not clear, you know, exactly what his involvement was. I didn't realize Steve Tisch has been a movie maker.
Mm.
Did you know that was his business?
No clue.
Some of the biggest, I mean, some really big movies, too. He was the movie producer he's a movie producer.
To be honest with you, I mean, I may have heard his name, but Steve Tisch was not on my radar at all until this Epstein file.
Exactly. And a little bit on mine, the Mara family were the longtime owners of the Giants, and I knew that from the history of the Giants years and years ago. And then, I don't know when Tisch entered the picture, might have been around 2000 or so where he bought in, but... big-time movie producer, and also involved with the Epstein files. Now, his name has surfaced. And again, it's so – the areas seem to be so gray, and things are not I'd like some clarification on this, like, okay, well, how deep was his involvement?
Yeah.
So far, I don't think he said a whole lot about it.
He apologized for his relationship with Epstein, which is kind of the move that most of these high-profile names, when their names come out in these files, and there's a for sure smoking gun that, hey, they were at least in communication with Epstein.
Yeah.
Way after he had been facing these allegations and even charges. So that's what a lot of these high-profile names are apologizing for right now, even if in those emails they're not alluding to anything criminal. They're just saying, hey, how's it going? You know, there's like a muffin recipe that Epstein – there's so much that came from this. But then you add into that, too, AI.
Yeah.
And the ability to not just make emails look real. I mean, people have been doing that for a long time just with Photoshop, and put fake emails into the mix here with this huge document dump, but also fake images that people are saying, oh, wow, this makes so-and-so look incredibly guilty. Look at them here in the Epstein file list.
It's all.
And unless, you know, Grok or whatever social media site you use has a really good fact-checking system, and are able, that's the other good thing, I guess, about AI in this case, is you can use AI to tell you whether someone gave you something fake or not. And they'll say, no,
AI, this isn't. AI snitching on AI.
Yeah, exactly. But if there's no fact checks beside whatever claim someone's making, there are plenty of people right now who are thinking there's more people involved in this or whose names were dropped in this latest file dump than there actually were.
Two things. One is the conversation, as I waited on a breakdown of the Super Bowl, which never came. because one of the people actually knew Tish. The conversation was more about that, and they were saying, if you knew you were in there, wouldn't you beat it to the punch? Wouldn't you come out and say, hey, by the way, at some point my name may come out because I did have an association with Epstein at this level. Almost explain your innocence before you're even implicated in it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that would be, I would just, I guess probably, if I was one of these power players worried that the shoe's going to drop, but I don't think I would rush to talk about it because maybe my name would never surface.
You might just get away with it, which is so dark to think about.
Yeah,
but if you put yourself in their shoes, I'm sure a lot of these.
It's like, yeah, there's a decision to be made right now by a lot of them. The other thing is, we mentioned this yesterday, talked about this a little bit, was yes, underage girls were used in the sex trafficking. But they were all, you know, we're not talking about children here.
That's what some were saying, yeah.
But now, are we talking about children? Are we talking about deeper, darker behavior?
Mm-hmm.
And if we are, that to me changes it on a very frightening level. And now you're definitely not going to be one of the, well, you thought it was bad then, when we had the goods on you that the girl might have been 17, not 18.
Yeah.
And now things, if they actually drift into a darker area, wow.
And to clarify, because I know people love to pick us apart, especially with controversial topics like this, it was already bad. Sex trafficking was going on.
Sure.
And they were 15, 16, 17, even 18-year-old females if it was sex trafficking.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, some of the stuff that's been alluded to, that they were much younger children, or that even, you know, further deviance was also involved.
Yeah, further deviance.
And that's what some of these emails kind of point to, and it's very disturbing. But when you don't have answers, that leaves people grasping for answers, which means there are a lot of folks who are getting caught up in this who might not necessarily have been caught up, which why when you were saying, you know, if you were in any way involved with Epstein, would it be smart for you to come out ahead of it and say, listen, you're going to see my name, but trust me, I was taking my family out there. There was nothing going on that I knew about, but that might lead to actually more harm to your public image because mm-hmm. folks might not ever find out, you know.
Exactly. I mean, so how many people right now, how many were involved? How many people that we know who they are, famous people, are worried right now? Even if the level of their involvement was not so deep, but they're worried about the public hit. And then beyond that, how many people that we know or don't even know who they are, they don't necessarily need to be celebrities, but how many people are really concerned about this, about what information could come out about them, especially mm-hmm. the celebrities, but not necessarily them, but because of the behavior, because of what was transpiring between them, Epstein, and others.
Well, he had a really large net, obviously, and I think when we were talking about this early in the week, I said, you know, just go down the latest or pick up a Forbes 100 from 10 years ago, and everybody on that list is very likely to be somehow in Epstein's Rolodex, because he was talking to all of the richest people except Bezos somehow. Jeff Bezos completely, I haven't seen his name mentioned at all in any of this unless I'm completely off base on that, but Bezos seemed to have avoided it.
But you know,
Gates,
you go from
Bill Gates to Chomsky to even Elon involved in some of those, which there were a lot of fake stuff coming out about Elon with this dump as well. One I read to you, I was like, can you believe Elon was emailing this? And then it turned out that was somebody who had manipulated made a fake email to include in it.
Yeah, because the story was that even in this faked email, I guess what it was now, it made Elon look like the lonely boy that wasn't invited to the party.
Like he was asking to go to the island, and they said, "Sorry, we've closed shop.
Yeah,
you're not coming out here." But yeah, it's a lot to kind of try to grasp onto, and much like I guess when the JFK files, remember they released massive amounts of information that had not been released yet on JFK. Same thing with MLK. You get these people who have been following these stories for years and know more details than you and I could ever imagine. And you give them all of this to work with, but it's almost like that needle in a haystack thing where so much information is out there, we still might not ever know the truth.
Well, are the sleuths, are the that are dedicating their time to going through all this stuff, I mean, if there's enough of them out there, obviously, just do the math. More is going to come out. More people are investigating it more closely. More things will people be paid off to keep it quiet? I've got no idea, but it's I think more is coming because of those unpaid investigators.
Mm-hmm. Let me read some text, then we'll go to the break. Texter here says, nah, the Fifth Amendment will be invoked as far as the Clintons deposition. Said the Clintons are guilty of a lot. Stupidity is not one of them. Michael says, the released Epstein stuff basically completely proved he was either a Mossad agent or at the very least an asset for Israel and Mossad. And then Gene points out, he says, Putin is in the Epstein files. That was one of the headlines I saw as people try to figure out who exactly, if Epstein was working on behalf of another country or organization. Some of the headlines say, well, Putin was mentioned so often in this, he might have been an agent for Moscow. Matt from Daphne also, he sends us the story about Jill Biden's ex-husband charged with murder now. We kind of covered that earlier in the day.
That was a bizarre story.
And then I'll read this and we'll get out for the break. The Clintons are going to, quote unquote, testify. Guys, these two are lawyered up and have doused themselves in a half inch of KY jelly. And I don't know if I could read the rest of that text. Okay. And then is this Dan's way of saying his name may come out in the next 7 million pages of the Epstein files?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, me and Epstein, pretty darn tight, but that was years ago. Yeah, you know, a little country DJ from Mobile and maybe a little high school football on the side, and Epstein was all over me like, hey, what's your wealth?
Yeah, what are you doing this weekend? I'm going to fly you down.
It's 8:52, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings.
Jeff Poor joins.
Yeah, the sober mind of Jeff Poor. On the way, we break down some issues statewide and nationally. It's coming up.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
8:55,
Jeff Poor, working to get ready for his show. Tell you who's coming up here in just a minute. But first, let me tell you about Underdog Fantasy. We're not far away at all from football's biggest game. It'll be here this weekend, and you can get in on all of the action with Underdog right here, right now in Alabama. If you haven't hopped on and started playing Underdog yet, well, you're in luck. New customers score $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you make your first $5 fantasy entry. And playing on Underdog is easy. Just head over to the app, make entries on if a player will go higher or lower on stats like touchdowns, rushing yards, receptions, and more. And if you do have like a Super Bowl, I mean, if you do have a big game party, then you can get everyone else involved too, and you'll all be looking at your entries as the game goes along. I just went ahead and made another entry for the big game.
Are you going to have a big game party?
No.
Was that an invitation?
I will be solo.
Because I don't have NBC.
Okay, maybe you can come over, but that's it. But just made another entry here.
Can I invite a friend?
Sure. Just one, though, okay? It's just a one friend. Because I know your friends. Can't have too many of them over.
Raising your voice to me like that.
So my next entry here, Sam Darnold, Seattle quarterback, have him going lower than 230.5 passing yards. On the other side, I have Hunter Henry, tight end, with higher than half a rushing or receiving touchdown. So I just need one from Hunter Henry.
I like that.
And Drake May, the quarterback, I have him going higher than 222.5 passing yards. So that's how easy it is to make an entry. Plus, they have new promos dropping daily in the app. What you waiting for? Download the app today. Use promo code Dalton, D-A-L-T-O-N, and score $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you play your first $5 on fantasy. Promo code Dalton, Underdog, make plays, win money, must be 19+ and present. In Alabama, terms apply, see assets.underdogfantasy.com/web/playing-at-terms, _DFS_.html for details. Concerned with your play, call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit ncpgambling.org.
Okay, by the way, in an advertisement or a promotion of some sort, You have to call it the big game.
That's right.
But in every, just in conversation, we can say Super Bowl.
Super Bowl, as much as
we want, right?
Yeah, I think so. I don't think anyone's going to come in and arrest me for saying
it's,
that.
It's the Super Bowl. That's what it is. Get off my freaking back.
Come on. So Jeff, live from Montgomery, he's on the way next. And plenty to talk about there with legislation now making it all the way to Governor Ivey's desk and several different bills that have already passed, and then plenty more they're going to fight over the rest of the way through. So we'll see what happens there. And appreciate the text this morning. 251-343-0106. Keep them rolling for Jeff. We'll be back bright and early tomorrow morning.
No, we won't.
You'll be back
bright and early
tomorrow morning at 6 a.m.
Sean's going to join me.
I'm headed to the Super Bowl. Not really. I'm going to go see my brother in Valdosta.
Yeah, tell him what he's going to do. It's pretty cool.
Final flight as a pilot in the A-10 as they are sunsetting that crop of jets. So he's done in the A-10. He'll be an instructor pilot, but I'm going to go see his final A-10 flight. It'll be a good weekend.
Congratulations from us.